Hey everyone, we'll get you to the show in a second. Just want to give you the heads up about our latest Red Men Plus special offer. If you want even more Liverpool content in your lives, both in video and podcast forms, simply head to redmenplus.com. And if you sign up as a yearly captain subscriber and use the promo code RACE, R-A-C-E, you'll get 50% off a yearly subscription. So yeah, that'll get you covered for the rest of this amazing season, the search for a new manager, the summer transfer window, and pretty much all of the new manager's first season as well. So yeah, redmenplus.com, yearly captain subscription, promo code RACE, and get 50% off. I'll see you all over there. Hope you enjoy this podcast that's about to start right now.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the Redmen TV. This is the final word. Show Liverpool lost in the league, finally. 3-0 to Watford. I mean, if you're going to do it in the most unlikely, ridiculous situation possible and be as shit as you can as well in the process. Chris Pajak, Steve Hoare, George Stevens join us for this one. Chris, yeah, there was a weird sense of like gallows humour that kind of developed throughout watching that game where we all ended up, we're a bit annoyed and heads done in and what have you, but we kind of like, there was a bit of like laughter in the face of adversity of it all, because it was an absolute banner game of footy.
This is what happens when you get rid of Buvac, Paul.
Yeah.
Forget the 97 points, no, forget the European Cup, forget the form that we've been in. Klopp getting rid of Buvac is the reason.
No, it's not. We missed out on Nabil Fekir and we needed Nabil Fekir to break the lines. What else have we got anymore?
Didn't replace Coutinho.
Didn't replace Coutinho, mate.
I think. You know what I mean? You only spent 8 million on a left back.
If you spend your week playing with coconuts, you know, lads, how are we going to plan on who's marking Troy Deeney? No!
I have an interesting fact. Yeah.
This is what happens. That was literally the part of the
hour. Did you know Jurgen Klopp was 3-0 to Watford? First game. I don't know why he's Indian. It was Barmy, wasn't it? I mean, yeah, genuinely one of the worst performances. But Chris, got to take positives. It was a big win for Arsenal.
And everybody else, not just Arsenal. I mean,
Arsenal
enjoyed it the most. But like, everybody enjoyed it, didn't they?
And, I understand that.
I understand, and there's been a bit of an outpouring both ways. I mean, there's a few people
I saw Arsenal fans say, I'd rather win that gold Premier League trophy than a European Cup. Really?
You would say that though, wouldn't you? When you've only won that, you haven't won.
Yeah. It's like all the Man City fans going, oh, the league. The league's more important than the European Cup. Yeah, all right. Try it. Try it and report back. Have a go and see which you prefer.
They've been trying for 120 years.
Yeah, don't be like, Coke's better than Pepsi when you've only tried one of the two. Take the challenge, see what you fancy. There's been an outpouring. I don't mind. People who hate Liverpool can hate Liverpool and they can react to this the way they want. I love the fact that this is what Arsenal fans have got left. Because everyone forgot they did this last year when we lost to City as well. They were all sat there shitting themselves in case Liverpool did it because it's the last thing they've got. So fair play. I did enjoy the Nottingham Forest
brilliant.
Having our back about how many European Cups they won on.
Can I never open the bottle of champagne?
Yeah.
Just take a moment for that.
Yeah, let's just acknowledge that's a thing.
Yeah. He's a funny cat, isn't he?
He's a character, isn't he?
He's not a character at all. He's someone. It's what happens when people who aren't characters try to be characters. Is what Gary Neville is.
Yeah, I find that funny. That's just going to be a gif in me when we win the league.
It's
just going to be tons of celebrating Gary Neville champagne bottle moments. I actually quite thought some of it was quite funny. Like You mentioned Gallows, you know, I was all over it. Like, if you can't laugh at like your lad getting the three nil lead and then celebrating the crowd and a giant hornet comes over and mobs him.
Yeah.
If you can't laugh at yourself in that situation, then you're never gonna laugh at yourself because that's, I mean, that their mascot goes for it.
Oh, he does.
Yeah, Mighty Red needs to pull his finger out, and maybe he's got a bit cocky as well because, I mean, their mascot was in the crowd and ours was like nowhere to be seen.
Yeah, we've seen this firsthand, haven't we, Chris?
Harry the Hornet.
Harry the Hornet. Yeah. I Harry the Hornet's a beast.
He gets all the kids involved, doesn't he? Genuine thing.
Do you remember when he beat us last time and he done the knee slide? Absolutely brilliant.
Well, we saw it, didn't we, when we were there, when the aforementioned 3-0 loss, the disastrous one, the Adam Bogdan, Martin Skirtle, Lucas Leiva and loss. And the Harry the Hornet is like encouraging all the kids to stand up, and it doesn't feel pedo at all. It actually works really well, and he gets them all singing and all that kind of stuff.
Maybe that's what we need. We need to take Mighty Red with us next time.
Well, that's what we're lacking today. You can't go invincible unless you've got a mask. Look, Gunnosaurus is banging into it, like, is all I'm saying. And we've got Mighty Red, and we're kicking off because Mighty Red exists. Embrace Mighty Red. He might be the missing piece. The missing piece of the puzzle.
Play my centre half.
Next year.
Play my centre half.
Oh, God. Let's talk about it then, the elephant in the room, as it were. Loads of people are blaming Lovren, and I was amongst them. What I've seen is then there's a reaction of loads of people going, everyone was crap. And everyone was crap. But Dejan Lovren was fucking shy.
Yeah, I think Van Dijk said it in his post-match, and he was saying, you know, we weren't creative up top, which is, at the end of the day, yeah, we left three in, but we also didn't score three, which is an issue. But I do agree that you can't put the blame on one person as such, but Lovren did have an absolutely awful game. And it didn't help that everyone else seemed to just be below par, but he just stood out anyway.
Well, I was talking to my dad about this, and he said, what Lovren's done there is put paid to the notion that anyone can play centre-half of Van Dijk. Basically, even Van Dijk was going, fucking, his hair came out. Yeah. And Van Dijk lost the plot. He was so stressed out by the situation.
I've never seen him scream for a ball as much as he did against Watford. It was, I think I've never seen him lose as cool as much as he did there. And to be fair, I think anybody would position.
It was just mad, Chris. We're allowed to say when players are bad, by the way, without, you know, and the thing with Lovren, if he was any other centre-half, like if Joe Gomez has that game, you can kind of write it off. There'll be loads of people who wouldn't, but you can generally kind of write it off. I think even if Matip had that mad 5 minutes against West Ham and we just laughed our heads off about it. Now, if we'd lost points as a result of it, that might have changed the attitude. The thing about Dejan Lovren is, it's Dejan Lovren. No. You know what you're getting with him, and he's always going to have this game in his locker.
Yeah, and look, he's been brilliant for a long time for us. You know, I reckon 2 years really, in between ridiculous performances, but he had one yesterday, and there's no hiding from that fact. And the most annoying thing is, it's the type of games he's supposed to thrive in that he fucks up in. It's those, because I don't know whether he's on edge because he knows he's going to go into a physical battle and he tries to get round the front or put his arms all over the striker. I mean, there was just time and time again where Deeney just stood still. Like the goal that they got from the throw-in, it just bounces over Deeney because Lovren's got his arms on him and won't let him jump. And everyone else switches off at the same time, but Lovren's got to do better, first and foremost. Everyone was crap, but he was the worst of the crap.
Yeah.
And therefore, he was the worst player on the pitch.
Steve, you spent the weekend climbing up onto the aisle of Dejan Lovren Hill. Do you want to justify your stance?
Lonely place, that, I think.
that's false. I don't think he was the worst player. I thought the right back was worse for a start.
Trent overall was worse than
He did nothing. Nothing right. Not one cross went to one of our lads' heads. He plays the ball to their lads. The only assist he had all game was for them. and I am not saying Lovren was good because he's crap and he shouldn't. He needs to go because the scars are there. If Liverpool brought in a new 4-2 centre-half and he was of Dejan Lovren's level, but his name was Mike Smith, and he was all right and he was sound, everyone would be like, yeah, sound. Like, if we have Nat Phillips as our 4-2 centre-half, who played against Everton and got ran ragged by Calvert-Lewin for a while, but because he's Nat Phillips, you kind of let him off with it.
Yeah.
That's the Dejan, in the same way Moreno had to go and Mignolet had to go.
Yeah,
they were all right, good, they were sound, below-par players, whatever, but they just carried that over with them. And he's the only one that's left because it was him and Henderson, and Henderson's come out the other side of it.
Yeah.
So it's him. So he does need to leave, and Liverpool need to get a new fourth choice centre half, and for everyone's sake. But like that first goal, for example, the ball bounces dead eye over his head, and his mate in that situation should bail him out, and two of them don't. Mm-hmm. Two of them are gone. They're switched off. Like
Fabinho switches off.
All of them, and you know, Robertson's flat-footed, and Van Dijk's just standing. So that's the thing, is that if your mates have a hard time, sometimes I think it's unfair to say, you know, Van Dijk was made to look crap because Lovren was crap. Well, you can still bail your mate out. You know, I mean, doesn't like that. The second goal, is it when they think the ball's gone for a throw-in? Van Dijk just stops because he thinks it's gone for a throw-in. Mm. That's crap. Yeah. You know, that is crap. And Lovren's not good for it either. Don't get me wrong. He's not great for the other ones. So that's what I'm saying, is that he was bad. It was a collective shit show. Like every single one of them. Our best player was the goalie, and he left three goals in.
Yeah.
And that's where we was, is that I agree, Lovren shouldn't play for Liverpool no more. He should let him go in the summer. But I think to say Liverpool lost 3-0 at Watford because of Dejan Lovren, I thought that was harsh. I think Liverpool lost 3-0 at Watford because 10 lads had an absolute shocker.
Yeah.
It just so happened that they targeted Lovren, because because you're not going to...
Troy Deeney was rubbing his hands.
Yeah,
he was. But my issue with, let's say, going back to the throw-in one, yes, Fabinho switches off. Yes, Andy Robertson should probably get in front of his man. Yes, Van Dijk's on an island. But all three of them are expecting Lovren to do something. And, you know, if you're as part of a defence, you can't guess that your player, who's right near the ball, isn't going to attempt to win the ball. That you're not thinking that that's even an option.
Yeah, but then they're
thinking that he's going to head the ball, or that he's going to get the ball. But they're attackers, you know that.
Yeah, but Van Dijk's the best defender in the world. You could see from miles off. Shit, that ball's bouncing over his head.
Well, you're saying it's different. By that logic, if you're saying he's the best defender in the world, then he's right, isn't he? And Lovren's wrong.
No, I agree. Listen, Lovren missed the ball. He should have.
He didn't go for the ball.
Yeah, he missed the ball.
Yeah. The one thing that annoys me about Lovren, and I think it's highlighted by the fact that Van Dijk's the complete opposite, is Van Dijk is happy to go in all game without having to make a tackle. He's perfectly happy in that he's done his job. Lovren has to get involved.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter in what sense. Troy Deeney, you don't need to be that close to him in that space. It's okay to give, but you have to get involved. It's like he's seen like Liverpool fans' love for Skirtle and Agger and like that kind of tough nose sort of centre back, and thought, I'll be that.
But
you don't need to be every
game. His best moments have come, but the moments that you remember of Lovren are big headers, Dortmund, big header, Champions League final, Real Madrid. You know, he's got those big moments in him, but he's the kind of player, I think, who, if he was a boxer, it's like taking a big dig and getting staggered, and instead of just running away to get out the round and sit down and compose himself, he just goes with a flurry. He reacts by being more.
The only way
it's like
him.
Pickford. Yeah. Pickford's exactly the same. When Pickford makes a mistake, he tries to do something.
The only way Troy Deeney's ever effective, really, is if you get him into a fight.
Yeah.
When I watched Man City play them a while ago, and they just didn't go near him. They just said, we don't trust your first touch is good enough.
Yeah.
You can just win that ball uncontested, and one of our lads will take it off you. So, and that, once you get into that fight, you're better with him. Just say, we're not going to touch you. Let them go long to you, mate, and we'll deal with the second ball. Where when Lovren, I agree, is that he's not even that good at doing this. That's the thing. Yeah. What he's good at, he's actually good at sweeping sometimes, and clearing around the back. He isn't great in the air.
He's a much better defender when he's tasked with just defending and not having to be a hero and be a hero.
But there was no need to do that in that case.
My thinking on this might be a defence to Lovren. You're left with a choice between him and Matip, and you're told you're going into a game that's going to be a big fight. You're picking Lovren, aren't you?
No.
You still picking Matip?
Yeah, I think so.
I think Matip's a better player.
But I think
on paper.
But the logic, I understand the logic.
Yeah. No, I think I got.
Was playing at some fucking level last season. When he was playing as well as Van Dijk last season. Lovren's never played as well as Van Dijk. He's gone through 2 years of not fucking up, but he's not excelled. That's the difference. Matip's excelled.
I even wrote on Twitter. I very rarely do that because I couldn't be asked. I was like, that's a bit of a surprise. Like, I don't understand. Unless it's a fitness thing where maybe Matip's 90% and Lovren's 100, it kind of it made no sense in that. That's the exact game I don't want Lovren in. I disagree in that. If I think it's going to be a fight, I don't want him anywhere near that.
Okay.
I want him in the game where he's playing against one up front and Van Dijk can go and help him out and he can kind of nip in when he needs to do it. The last thing I want is Lovren playing against Troy Deeney, because there's only going to be one fella who wins that. And I found it odd that in that, like, if that's what you're expecting, if you're expecting a big battle, then that team didn't make sense. Like, Chamberlain doesn't play midfield in a big battling game. That's the thing. Well, yeah, that's the opposite. I think he would have liked Milner, wouldn't
he? But then you know that Watford are going to sit back, and they did for large portions of the game. But there was one player that they let have the ball all the time without pressing, and that was Dejan Lovren. And to an extent, they let Van Dijk have a lot of the ball. And,
he did play one fantastic ball into feet, but it was
a brilliant ball into Mou, but it was the wrong ball.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it was a stupid ball. It worked, don't get me wrong, but it's not a ball that you can consistently complete and Mou win out on. Dejan Lovren is not a great passer of the ball. He's not good when he gets into a physical battle. And he's not someone you want on the ball in loads of space because he does random shit.
Yeah.
The rest of the team go, where the fuck did that come from? Why is he doing that?
Well, we were talking about this the other day. He's got a bit of, like, Emre Can had this, where he, in a system, you do the most obvious thing. A lot of the time, it's because it's planned, because everyone else knows what you're doing. That's what a team is, that's what a system is. And then Richard did a lot of this. He's like, that's the most obvious ball. Ha ha ha. I'm not going to play the ball you think I'm going to play. And we could even go back the other way. And it's like, great, mate, you've played one pass that no one expected, but you fucked the entire move up because everyone else expects it to go to him, to him, to him. And you've completely changed it for what? Because you thought it was a good idea to do something, and Lovren has got a bit of that. The issue is once he gets himself into trouble, and there's no coming back for that. And I get the fight side of things, and we all looked at that first half and said, Watford have got a bit more aggression than us here. They're leaving the boot in. They're trying to get in our faces. They're being a bit dirty. And I wonder whether Lovren's gone, okay, cool. Well, I can fight fire with fire. You don't need it from your centre-halves. We needed it from the midfielders. We needed it from the full-backs. We needed it from the forwards. And I wonder whether their whole game plan fell down on that thing of whether the mentality of our team, we talk about the mentality, Monster Giants, whatever. Trent Alexander-Arnold getting snapped in the first half. And you just wonder all of a sudden where they're thinking, I kind of want to be fit for Atletico. I kind of want to be fit for the running. Do I really need to go all in a game away from Watford? And I felt like we lost the mentality battle in that regard, which is mad to say for a team that's so strong mentally.
I think the captain not being there is a big one.
Yeah.
I think, again, I don't think it's an aggression thing. I think what Henderson, to an extent Milner brings as well, is we start again. Like, we win the right to play, you earn the right to play. Every single game, we haven't lost yet, we're great, we're brilliant, but we're not just going to stroll in here and win. And that it felt like Liverpool turned up with a bit of that about them, where, you know, a lack of humility. I remember Chris Wilder saying Liverpool are humble. Even, you know, to play in Sheffield United, they expect to win, but they still absolutely graft.
That work, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And it didn't feel like that. And again, it was across the board. They were all useless. I had a theory that maybe, you know, the injury to Delafeu might have affected Van Dijk a little bit in that, because it would if, you know, you've snapped someone's knee. Maybe it's in your head. I don't know, but he didn't look right. As well, it was one of those days where, in hindsight, if you're all gonna have that game, you might have it all together in a game with that.
Yeah.
Hope, you know, again, the unbeaten season would have been amazing, but it shouldn't cost us in the long run. Where going into the Champions League games and the FA Cup and stuff, maybe it is a bit of a kick up the arse because.
But the thing is, the West Ham should have been that kick up the arse.
Mm. Oh yeah, maybe Norwich. We haven't been good since the break. We haven't really, but it's. And people saying, like, you know, we only left three in which Lovren's fault. Like, we should have got beat by West Ham.
Yeah.
You know, their goalie threw two in, and we weren't great.
Yeah.
So Lovren wasn't on the pitch. It was
That's the annoying thing, though, because this logic is it's been coming.
It has.
Mm-hmm.
But
not that bad.
Yeah, true. But there should have been the warning signs. The warning signs have been posted loud and clear. Again, but I don't know. It happens, doesn't it? I think it's footy, you know.
Every team gets beaten.
Yeah.
Every team, you know, that Arsenal's invincible side may have gone through a league season unbeaten. They got beaten. They were still the same team at some point. They got beat. It's what happens. We're a ridiculous amount of games in. It was like the fucking last day of February or whatever, and we got beaten in the league. But that Man City side that was Centurions got beaten.
Yeah.
You know, they've posted the highest point tally ever in Premier League history, and maybe we'll go one ahead of that. But that's what happens. Football happens like that. to be fair to Watford, I don't think any of us have said it, but we probably all think it. They played brilliantly.
They did. Mm-hmm.
They played absolutely brilliantly. But two things needed to happen for them to win the game. We needed to have an off day, and they needed to play brilliantly, and both of those things happened.
It was a bad time, as much as it is, it's a bad time to play them, because, as I say, they had that attitude of, they kind of don't care if they pick yellow cards up, so they'll go for ankles, and they'll leave studs up here and there. And if someone gets sent off, well, it's just fighting spirit, isn't it? It's just them giving their all towards staying up. They don't care if our players get injured. They don't care if whatever. They had nothing to lose in that game. And I've seen a number of teams, George, and we'll see it between now and the end of the season, where teams have got nothing to lose, but they've already mentally lost. Mm. Whereas Watford went into that game, having seen Norwich pick up points, and thought...
I thought it was very similar to when we played them at home. And they were like, I think it was Nigel Pearson's first game in charge of them, and they were good. Like they played really well, and that was when I thought, you know, we might drop points against them here, a draw or something. But when we watched them the other night, and I thought that, again, it's a good side. I thought De La Feo was going to pick up one, obviously with his injury and things. But I think everybody's unspokenly give them credit. It's not like we got absolutely turned over by an awful side.
We got beat 3-0. If they stig a 1-0, you can afford to be a bit churlish on it, can't you? When you got beat 3-0, I mean, Watford you've done that.
The defenders were brilliant. Yeah. Both of them, they headed everything away. They cleared everything, they blocked everything. We didn't really have a chance.
Shot on target.
Yeah, and it was Robertson's one, which wasn't nothing. I mean, like, they didn't give us a sniff. And that's fair play. Like, I thought they were really, really good. I'm surprised that, you know, they're down there. I'd expect them to stay up based on what I've seen over the two games we've played against them. They have been good. And at Anfield, it was only the lad Saar couldn't hit a cow's arse with banjo.
Yeah.
But then he put that right the other day. It's one of those where, you know, like Manny was saying, didn't he? Like, you know, he's a shy boy, look after him. That didn't go well. They had to make a day up that doesn't exist for us to play on.
Yeah,
because we couldn't lose any other way. some fella in China has brought this mad disease up. So they're doing everything they can to try and fuck us over here.
Yeah.
We have to just kind of get battle our way through it.
I did like the notion of we're not going to be worried about any on this day reminders of that game for another 4 years, which is great.
We're laughing. I just think, like, we were completely outplayed in every, you know, the manager got his, their manager outmanaged Klopp, which very rarely have ever happened. The tactics were spot on. They had the game plan to a T. And we just weren't good. And, you know, we made subs and, like, didn't really do anything. That didn't impact the game. You know, Minamino, Lallana had done all right. Origi offered nothing. It was like everything we tried just absolutely failed. And, you know, when you see a sub warming up, usually you kind of get an inkling who's going off.
Yeah.
And it could be any of them.
Yeah.
He could take any of these off and be.
It was interesting. I was watching the League Cup final on Sunday, and they brought De Bruyne and Bernardo Silva on. And there's a point where you're Aston Villa and you must just go, oh God. Like, we've helped, you know, we're still in this, but they've just brought the big guns on. And there's a converse that happened with us there where Liverpool made themselves weaker.
They actually changed the game as well. Like, if you watch De Bruyne and Bernardo Silva, changed the game, it picked up, it brought that. Origi came on, nothing new happened.
Yeah.
I wasn't quite sure where he was playing, whether he was on the wing, whether he was up top. Yeah. Like, he was just wandering. And then we brought Lallana on, and I thought maybe that is.
Lallana's a good player, but he's not grabbed the game by the scruff of the neck player.
Exactly, and I don't understand. We argued about Ox getting a chance to start, and he did nothing again. And that's the most frustrating thing, because he has a game where he comes on as a sub. If he were to come on as a sub in that game instead of Lallana, different type of player.
100%.
But to start that game, he just offered nothing.
I mean, he deserved the start.
And that's what's frustrating.
But this is the awkward situation we've been in, Steve, since the winter break. I think we've lost rhythm. He's now trying to get all the players, and I said this prior to the first game back, it's like, we've got to somehow, there's loads of players you need to play, but these are not the games you need to play them in. Like, this, I mean, I don't know, was Kater injured? Do we know?
Yeah, he said something like sore hips.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's a shame, because ironically, this was probably the game for him, and Ox coming off the bench, as opposed to what we saw.
I think Fabinho was an issue as well. I think Fabinho was a big issue, in that he hasn't been good since he came back.
No.
He hasn't really done anything. He looks... His reactions look beat off.
Yeah.
Like, he's usually so instinctive and stuff. Like, everything seems a little bit slow. You don't like that. He doesn't.
You don't need Fabinho in these games, Steve. That's the thing. Or you need Fabinho. A perfect informed Fabinho is fine because he's so good. It doesn't really matter. But again, in the game, you need a Gini Wijnaldum in the six, or you need a Jordan Henderson in the six for that. It was a bit of a waste of Fabinho, but he needs to play because you've got to get him. And it's not like without Henderson. We've not quite, and without Milner, we've not quite got the options.
Yeah,
I think you know, I agree with Steve. I think Fabinho hasn't been on top form clearly, but the midfield setup was all wrong for me. They were miles away from Fabinho. Yes. They didn't give him any options, and you know, some of that's down to Watford and their positioning and stuff, and some of that's down to our lads not dropping deep coming for it. They were, like, Chamberlain spent more time where Firmino is than in the midfield, offering himself for a pass. Yeah. And, you know, Fabinho's great at those switches and hitting the balls over the top. When the space behind, there wasn't any of that for him to use. He couldn't use that skill, one of his best assets, because there was just too many defenders there. And the way that they had almost five at the back cut space out for the forwards. So when they ran inside, there was just three centre-backs. So that was dead hard to get the Mane and Salah the ball. Firmino started to drop deep, there was no one there. There was just a pass back to Fabinho or another centre-half. The midfield has been, you know, I think until Henderson gets back in there, I don't want to go overboard on this, but that's going to take a little bit of time to work on. You know, Fabinho, Wijnaldum plus one isn't our midfield. Yeah. Our midfield is Fabinho, Wijnaldum and Henderson. And it's a really, it's like its own little ecosystem. It's really finely tuned. It's really finely balanced. When you take one of those players out, it will take time to get that level of understanding.
I think the Keita thing's an issue as well in that. I'm a Keita fan. I think when he plays, he just isn't playing enough. Yeah. It's every so often he's just gone. And it's so frustrating that you know, you look at your bench now and it's like, well, you've got to bring Lallana on, and you've got no one else mm-hmm. because I'm not just saying it's his, because you know a load of people get injured. It just seems with Keita is that it's more
well, we had this
common.
We had this with Sturridge, didn't we? It's a bit where it's hard. You naturally start blaming lads who are not fit.
It's not his fault. It's just.
But then you get into that. I mean, at least Klopp's not come out and said Naby needs to know the difference between pain and real pain, because that'll be the end of Naby Keita, won't it? The second he says he puts that in everyone's minds. But no, you're right. There's a frustration with that, because I think the Liverpool's. Whether it's the best midfield for teams in the bottom third or the bottom half of the table for me is Henderson, Wijnaldum, Keita. You know, what we started to see in December when Fabinho went out, when Keita was adding goals from midfield, and Henderson was able to play every blade of grass all of a sudden. But we're having to try and make things work, and you're like, the balance was all over the place. Oxlade-Chamberlain was one of the reasons for that, and then you're left with a situation where it reminded me of Burnley away. Three seasons ago,
where we had 40 shots and got beat 2-0.
Except without the shots,
just crosses.
Exactly. We had no Mane was missing for that game, wasn't he? After he'd scored against Arsenal on his debut, and we just were like, what the hell do we do against all these lads in front of us? Except we had all our boss lads up front, for whatever reason.
They were crap. Those three, absolutely crap. Yeah. And it wasn't a case of like they couldn't pass the ball.
Yeah,
it was like I've never seen it like it. Just we were all of us like just passes going out for throw-ins or like straight to their lads or touches off. It was just like, and it's almost like a, again, like a bit topical, but like it's like an epidemic, isn't it? It's like one fella gets it and then all of a sudden it's get that in your SEO. Some mention coronavirus and googling for it. No, but it's like it was just mad. It's like I've never seen Mane just be that. His touch be that poor,
yeah.
And like a little layoff to Alexander Arnold just goes for a throw in, or it's just
bizarre. Funny because everyone's playing the winter break. Georgia, but
ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I get it, because obviously there's clearly a lack of rhythm there or whatever, and we've said you're going to see the benefits of it. We'll never be able to truly know, but the benefits will be seen when they're a bit fitter at the end of the season. One thing, I thought Andy Robertson showed the point of the winter break, because I thought he looked really good, and he looked fitter than he's probably looked for a long time. So if we're looking for shoots of positivity, the fact that Robbo was able to put in that level of a shift in shows that there's something to it.
Yeah, definitely. I think we're blaming the winter break because it's the kind of obvious. I think as well, we've got to look into the fact that Hendo's out, which is massive. Also, James Milner's been out. Yeah. And the fact that they're two key experienced players, not just technically, they're the people that you want on the pitch to shore things up. And that's one thing that we didn't have. It looked kind of a bit hopeless when there was nobody on there being like, let's just not even calm it down, but this is what we do. Let's get back to it. And I do think that. I think Robbo had a decent good game. I think on the other hand, though, Trent had an absolute awful game. And I think again, it's another one in the agenda. Do you believe he needs a break of some sort, of a rest, whether that's mentally, physically or whatever. But I realised, because I thought, isn't it good? Mo Salah's like, I've never seen him track back like as much, and I thought, but why is he tracking? Oh, because Trent's half asleep.
For me, I don't think Trent's had a good game. I think he had a bad game. I think he makes a terrible mistake for his their third where he tries to play it back for Alisson. But also, he's not a fucking magician. You can give him the ball on the halfway line, but if there's 10 lads between him and his next pass, he ain't going to be able to do it.
Yeah.
And what we saw was an over-reliance on Trent. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's been able to pull it out so often for us that you become reliant on it. And you're almost like, well, what do we do now?
Yeah.
Trent's passion's not working. Well, he's allowed an off game. Everyone's allowed an off
game.
That's
what we said the other day of how young he is. He's a kid. And we are relying so heavily on this kid. It's great because he's so talented, but when he does have his off days, you need to give him that little leeway because he is a
kid. We're not far removed at all from the days when him and Joe Gomez were in rotation for the right back position.
And he was young talent.
And now he has to start every game because he's so good.
And there's no one else there.
Yeah.
There's literally no one else who can play right back. It's Hendo, maybe Milner, maybe. That's about it. You're probably not throwing Williams in.
Yeah, exactly. Or you throw Nico Williams in, who wasn't even on the bench. It was Hoover, wasn't it?
I think you can underestimate Gomez. Again, we've mentioned the fact that it's Lovren's in, and that made an issue. How good Van Dijk and Gomez are as a pair. I mean, it's up there with the best I've seen for Liverpool personally. I go back to Hippie Honcho, and then it was Carragher Hippie for a while, wasn't it? And they were really good. Statistically, the Van Dijk Gomez partnership has been out of this world good. And maybe it is, as much as everyone lauds Van Dijk, maybe Gomez deserves, but it can't obviously just be him, because as a duo, and then maybe that makes Trent look better because he's got Gomez on that side and he doesn't have to worry about other, it was a collective shit show basically of missing lads, injuries through injury and fitness, and then a poor game, and then their tactics completely nullified us in that. Our creative outlets are Trent and Andy Robertson. That's what we do at the minute, and that's fine. But like you said, if they've got a back six, it's no surprise. But 24 crossing and not one, it's finds an head because they've got big giant grocks at the back, and we've got Mo Salah on his own up front. Lord of averages they're probably going to do it in that. That's where it's a shame. Like Keita, there's no Shaqiri, because you need all right. It's a bit of spark. If you're Klopp, you're thinking Plan A is Trent. Plan A, maybe I don't know. It's Trent, that's not working. Well, what can I do? And his first change had to be Adam Lallana. Well, Adam Lallana hasn't been that player for 4 years. He was a creative player in his second season, maybe. Other than that, he's not. He's a bit of a grafter now. He's a bit of a skinnier James Milner. He just runs around and gets.
Lallana, you want on when you're 1-0 ahead and you want to keep it going.
The lack of creativity, and it's not, you know, we do have them in the squad. They were just all out.
Lallana's a good move as part of a wider sweeping change, is really going for a kind of thing. Like we saw it in the Charity Shield, and when you bring him on, you bring him and Cater on, and all of a sudden you can just play 20 yards because they're very tidy around the edge of the box.
We did that at Old Trafford, Cater and Lallana. Yeah. Come on and change the game. Yeah, he's not going to do it on his own.
We left him to be, all of a sudden he was right, everyone was in front of him and he's floating around 10 yards inside their half with the ball, being asked to pick out these killer balls, which is like, if Lallana could do that, and he can all do it to some extent, and he's not bad at doing it. He played a couple of decent passes.
It's the post,
but he's not an assist merchant, is he? And he's unlucky because he hits the post. So he does come close to having a really tangible impact on it, but it doesn't feel like it feels like you're hoping Lallana's going to pull something out. Not like, right, here's the backup plan. The backup plan is this, and we know that this is going to work for us. It was a bit.
Also, you can talk about the substitutions, but like, you've got to talk about the system as well. Yeah. I mean, at any point during this season of Liverpool had Origi on the left, Salah up top, Mane on the right, and Firmino in a 10. Like, that's a roll of the dice, big time. Mm-hmm. And it didn't work. Mm-hmm. We've not done that. I don't think ever.
I've generally yet to see Origi be effective on the wing. I argue that quite a lot because I think as a striker, he's really, really talented in that striker role. He's good with his feet in kind of the same way Torres was, but he's also got that in behind, that physical presence. On the wing, I don't see him offer. I feel like he's wasted out there.
I get it, and I think in that game, I'm turning around saying that we should have just... Given the way we were playing, we should have just put him centre forward because he's the kind of lad that if you just give him
a little header.
Yeah, exactly. Get a little stiff, he'll stick it in because he's like that. I think he can be useful on the wing. I think I've seen and unfortunately, the games that immediately spring to mind are probably games from last season, to be fair. But like, you know, he's got that ability. He can go, but he's not afraid to go to the byline, which I quite like about it. The thing is, though, the last couple of games he's come in that position, his decision making's been awful. Like, he should just go be perfunctory. Go and get to the byline and just try and get a couple of crosses. Drop the shoulder, do that. And if an opportunity presents itself to go do the way and get a shot off, fine.
That's what I mean. The balls that he'd put in or the things that he's picking out, you'd want Origi in the middle to get onto them.
This is the point of the season that it always happens to us, though, with the fringe players. Like, Klopp's done very well to keep them kind of going, but also, and maybe this is a result of the winter break as well, that everyone's kind of, your fringe players are less in rhythm than your main guys, and now everyone's kind of dropped down a rung. But we find this time of last year, where every year, where this is the chance where you really need your fringe players to go, but it's also the time when does it start to creep into the heads of, well, I know my role in the squad. I'm only at this point at the end of the season. Have I got to think about, the Euros, or am I thinking about a move in the summer, or, you know, do you get the same level of intensity from them? Now, we did last year because, again, Origi comes in and this is the time of the year from now on where he made his name for us, really, isn't it? But it's going to be a big test for those lads because we're going to need them. We saw it the weekend.
Yeah, and look, spinning it all back to Keita, I think, you know, Simon Brundish a long time ago on Twitter, I remember reading, said the biggest stat or the most important stat is games available for. And the lads that we're talking about that maybe could have affected that game, Naby Keita, Shaqiri, they're not available for enough games for us. They're the ones that you'd be wanting to bring on in this type of a game, and they're not available.
Yeah.
And that's a problem for us.
And credit to Adam Lallana in that regard, because he should be on that list, shouldn't he, of the players who aren't
available. Definitely, he came in and was one of the ones, like you said, he hit the post. He looked like he was actually trying to.
Yeah.
And like I said, it's only hindsight that we looked at that and think, oh, wouldn't it be nice for him to start?
Minamino will be one of them, I think, in time. But again, we were saying, we're watching, I feel a bit sorry for him.
That's mad. Remember when we brought Chamberlain on, we were going to be like 4-0 at Man City away. Mane had been sent off. We just threw Ox on. I was like, yeah,
go on, do something.
It was a bit like Minamino. Yeah, that lad's... This isn't his season. His season's probably next season. He might score us a couple of big goals between now and then, but he's not.
He just wants to. It's like on Become a Legend mode or whatever. You just want someone to pass it to you so you can just try and do something. All you want to do is complete a couple of passes, just get some touches of the ball. That's all he's looking for.
Stop the game.
You know, and the problem is, of course, he's immediately in that territory of he's dropping deep to try and get the ball, just to get on the ball, just so he can feel like he can have some tangible impact. Whereas really, you know, there needed to be probably a bit more a pragmatic approach to that. I don't know what the answer
I
to thought, that
was. I agree with George. I do think, listen, although he's the greatest manager we've had for a long time, like, you can't blame the manager. Mm-hmm. Like, everything he did was shit. You know, it didn't work. Yeah. There's logic behind it, and sometimes it is what it is, isn't that? Is that the process is fine, but like sticking Divock Origi left wing and putting Mo Salah up front to go to those two grocks. I was like, what do you expect them to do? You're asking for magic. You're not planning a goal. You're saying we need Mo on the edge of the box to do one of his mad mazy runs and twist, and he can do that. But that, you know, that isn't a Liverpool goal. Liverpool's goals are byline, Robertson cutting it in, Trent away. It was as if Klopp had gone, roll the dice, get all four of the lads up front,
yeah,
and let's just see what we can get. And if you're going to do that, you're better sticking Origi up front and just twatting at him. And just going, or putting Van Dijk up there and going, you know what, we're gambling on throwing the dice, let's just go for it. It was almost like he had a bit of a brain fart. And listen, it's fine. We all have off days, it's one of them. It just never looked like we had a plan to, from 1-0 down, we had the bloody nose, and I've always backed Liverpool at 1-0, and I'll back them at 2-0 down to get something out of the game.
Mm-hmm.
But at 2-0, I was sitting with my fiance, my kids, and she was going, bloody hell, they're losing, they never lose. And I was like, yeah, I don't think they're getting back into this one. Like, at West Ham, I was like, it's West Ham, I had a feeling we'd get something.
You need 5 minutes.
You
just need 5 minutes after to be like, right, go and show us something. Go and have a really big chance. I mentioned earlier with the Dortmund game in the Europa League. They got the early goals and you're like, oh shit! But you're like, you just need a reaction. You need to show that we've got something in, some fight in us. And if you survive the 5-10 minutes after that, as the opposition team, you're starting to think that you've kind of got a little bit in yet. We just didn't, you know, you're not testing the goalkeeper particularly.
Henderson come into it, because yeah, I think they're the ones who kickstart that and have that bit of spark. They may not be the creative kind of, but they're the ones who let the creative players, you know, excel, because they're the ones who are shoring things up and kick-starting that.
I agree. I think that Henderson particularly, this is why he's a great captain. Not only is he the shouter, but he's also the player that runs around, yeah, and shows everyone, yeah, the effort that's needed.
I think that's why it's hard for Van Dijk, because as much as it's lead by example and things, one, you've just conceded a 2-0 goal, so if you're shouting at me to do something, you do your job, I'll do mine. But then also I think there's not a lot he can do in terms of showing how hard he's working, other than, you know, putting in.
He gets on the ball one point, hits a great through ball to Robbo, doesn't he? And then Robbo, it's a bit of a shit shot. It must be really annoying, because that's the area of the field that he takes his shots from in the warm-ups every single game, and he just sticks it right at the keeper.
Yeah.
But the cross wasn't on, because they would drop back. And
near the situations, as you fall back, you're just blaming it toward the goal.
You're open for a cock-up or a rebound.
Yeah,
or that one in 100 where it comes off exactly the right part of your boot with exactly the right amount of spin that puts it in the one ball-sized gap between the goalkeeper and post, anywhere that is in the frame.
I felt that Wijnaldum couldn't impact the game. I thought he was babysitting Fabinho a little bit. Mm. There's times in the first half when Wijnaldum was making last-ditch tackles in our box, and in that system, that isn't really his job.
Yeah.
There was the one where he wins the ball back and then he nearly loses it. Will Hughes nearly nicks it off him. But he's on his own in the middle of our box. That's not really where he's meant.
They won the midfield battle.
Wijnaldum got roughed up a lot, and you saw the tackle that Will Hughes, and he leaves it in on him, and Wijnaldum looks like he's about to deck him. And I thought, he's got in your head there, yeah, of like, that's Wijnaldum's game of not dirty, but being strong and sort of shoving, yeah, and that type, yeah, of thing. So for him to win that,
yeah,
is, you know, that's, well, I'm better at your game than you are, and like, I play for Watford.
And that's what I mean about that, is that Liverpool couldn't match that, it couldn't match aggression.
Yeah.
And we didn't need to necessarily match aggression, but it actually would have. That's a game where James Milner just goes and puts one of them in the stand.
Yeah. Yeah.
And probably
two.
Yeah, exactly. You know, or Jordan Henderson gets in you need that guy who makes you feel like it's fine, don't worry. They can be like that all they want, but
he could be in the refs here. Yeah. You've got him in midfield, and
yeah,
like Deeney not getting a yellow card for Trent. Yeah. I guarantee if Henderson on that pitch, he is all over that ref. And the next thing Deeney does, gets him a yellow.
Yeah.
And again, Van Dijk's a centre half. He can't do that. And yeah, you don't really associate Wijnaldum and Chamberlain with that. Chamberlain's a bit nice at times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, he got done in the corner and he started laughing. I was like, no, what the fuck are you laughing at? No, you're not laughing. Henderson sometimes comes across to me as like a bit of a fake hard man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, in that, you know what I mean? Like, he looks like he's not, but he's having a go, and he's like, yeah, There's no way in a million years Jordan Henderson takes them boot, like, let's try and get volleyed by Troy Deeney.
No.
Yeah. Just doesn't happen. He's in Deeney's, it just doesn't happen. And to be fair, the ref did no favours, because by not booking Deeney for that, you are laying down a level. You know,
I'm gonna let you leave one in here.
Yeah.
The thing about it is that I had a little moment, I was like, oh, the referee, I'm not sure. And then it's Michael Oliver, isn't it? And you go, well, he's the best ref in the country, isn't he? Like, you mean, so what are you going to do? There's no one else. You know what I mean? You can't even have a hypothetical situation where you give it to another referee and they do a better job. It was one of them. I think ultimately it's got to be written off as, you're right. If you're going to have a fucking off day, have it be the worst it can possibly be. So at least, because, you know, I was joking before, and I am joking when I say this, I was quite actually excited to do this, because it's like, it's actually quite nice to talk about the things that are, what needs to be done and where things went wrong, because it becomes a bit like, there's something in there now. They've got something to learn. They get to go in and they've gone in on Sunday and they'll have done their post-match analysis and all that kind of stuff. And there's something for them to all take away. Mm. Here's what you did wrong. You're not clawing for small things. It's like, right, here's all the things you did wrong. Go and work on them. Something to improve on. Which sounds fucking stupid, to be honest. But at least it freshens the message up a bit, as opposed to just keep going, keep doing what you do. And it's like, nah, that was shit, lads. And if you play like that again, it's going to happen again. We've got 12 points. We need 12 points to win the league. Like, it's up to us now to decide whether we do that in 4 games or 10.
Yeah.
The big, you know, the two big cup games coming out. If you play like that in those two games, you're probably gonna win the league. We're all gonna have a brilliant time in May. We're all gonna be having a really good party. But do you want an even bigger party? Do you want to be in the Champions League final again? Do you fancy winning the FA Cup? Because why not? Because if you do those again, then that's gonna go. And listen, it won't tarnish this season, because this season's gonna go down as an amazing season no matter what. But I do think that the message, it must be hard sometimes as a manager to say, you need to do this and this, because they're probably thinking, we were absolute shite against West Ham, but we still won. So yeah. Even if it's only that little tiny, tiny percentage, yeah, where this time they were crap and they got, well, you know, 3-0 flat at Liverpool, like, yeah, 5 would have been, yeah, you know, Watford missed some chances. Yeah. The lad misses his easiest chance, you know, for Zacha.
One. Yeah.
So it's like, you know, our goalie makes a fuck up and then saves it, yeah, straight. You know, they could have had 5. So I do think if Klopp ever wanted to absolutely hammer them, if he's doing it, it's going to, yeah, be.
There's probably that degree. You can hammer them after West Ham, but there's probably a thing where they think, oh no, it's fated. This, like, Lady Luck's on our side. It's going to bail us out if we keep going. And we've had a lot of them this season. It's nice sometimes for it to run out. I want to ask you the question about the invincibility thing, because I've been saying for a few weeks, and it's easy to kind of say this, and it seemed like it's revisionism or whatever, but I like the idea of going invincible, because I like the idea of doing something that, you know, that isn't often done. And the gold trophy thing would have been lovely, small as it is. And it's not to say that because we've done that, it means we're now going to win a treble or we're going to do a double. That's not how it works. But how are we feeling about the fact that Liverpool can't now do the invincible thing?
I personally, my thing with the Invincibles is I don't class the Invincible season as good as, say, City's 100-point season.
Okay.
City drew 12. Arsenal's Invincibles drew 12 games. If Liverpool drew 12 games this year, they wouldn't win the league.
Yeah.
I don't think we would. I think City would probably. I mean, City have been a bit up and down, but you know, if you're going to win 26 and draw 12, I don't think you're probably going to win the league.
Okay.
Or it's going to be hard. So, I think City Centurions is the best. That's the benchmark. I think the 100 points they set is the standard. It would have been nice not to listen. It'd been nice to break both. And losing games is crap, but. Like, I don't get, like, why that. If we'd have drew 5 of the games that we've won, but also drew against Watford, is that a better season because you haven't lost the game? That kind of, I can't get my head around that.
It's only better if all we win is the Premier League. If you get me, because you get that extra thing on top of it.
And I said this at the start, it's a very difficult thing to do, because if you're in other competitions, they may take priority if the league's wrapped up.
We don't have that anymore. We don't have that hanging over us. We don't have that pressure going into games to be invincible. And you get the option to go in there and fire the lads up and say, listen, what you've done is incredible so far. You have a fucking off day like that again and you won't win any other trophies. Chelsea will knock you out the cup. Atletico will take advantage of you. If you win that game again, you might go in there in poor form. Like we've seen, we've been complacent since the winter break. That's the word. You know, lacking rhythm and all that, we've been complacent. Yeah. We've almost got to a point where we believe the rest of the league's shit, or we believe we're so much better than the rest of the league that it kind of doesn't matter. That's a really dangerous place to be. We don't have that anymore. And for one loss, I'm happy that that's the case.
I think Guardiola's, we beat Guardiola's 100 points. Did we beat the 100 point team? I think we did. It was the 4-3. The 4-3. Wasn't it? The 4-3 one. Do you have the game against United when they could win the league and then they lose? You know what I mean? So it's one of those, isn't that? I've got... It would have been nice to break both. I think that could have, you could have, in one fell swoop, you could have had the points record. Oh, and by the way, we never lost a game as well.
Yeah.
But, like, if you ask me from the greatest Premier League teams, I don't even know if they're, like, top three. The Invincibles. It was. Listen, what he did was amazing. Because they won a title and it was 90 points, I think it was. Well done, fantastic. But, like, I see it more a case of, like, I want that point. I want 101 points because I think that it, I know I saw Roy Keane say they don't look at your back of your medal for your points and all that. But mm-hmm. I think that is the benchmark. I put Pep City at that season as the one that everyone that should be the aim.
The thing for me, I think for me, invisibility was ranked above points tally because I don't really care. I think once you win the Premier League, I don't really care about how many points mm-hmm. you win because I think that's less. I think because you get nothing extra for that. There's no more silverware in the cabinet for the amount of points that you
have. But the gold trophy, you fancy that.
But the gold trophy is something, isn't it? You know, again, all you've got to do is look at how Arsenal fans have reacted to us losing that and all those pictures. Like, again, what, a month ago, you didn't even know it existed. Now you've probably seen that picture fucking half a dozen times in the last couple of days. Again, for me, it's about, I think we're now at this point where it's good because I think you're right, it takes the pressure off. We're not as fans as well. It means that we were in danger of it all being dead disappointing, of us winning the league and it being a massive anticlimax. Whereas I think hopefully it refocuses on Liverpool. No matter when, you know, as long as they win the league, that's the most important thing. And anything else on top of that should be considered a bonus, really.
I think as well, like, I think I would be lying if you said it, but it didn't slightly annoy you that the. Because I wasn't that arsed about going invincible. It wasn't like. You know, the fact that Liverpool winning the title in my lifetime is what I wanted to be, the top team. Because obviously you have previous generations of talking about Liverpool and having that sort of badge of honour of Liverpool. So if that was the main thing. But I think it was just the way it was lost that kind of annoyed me the most. If it wasn't like, you know, we had this big tough battle and we were unlucky because we just lost out, or there was a ref to blame, or there was something. It was generally just a poor performance that you just stood there going, do you not realise what you have just done there? You were one win away from breaking a record and you could have, like, you've just, like, just have a look at that and kind of, because it generally was just like people turned up and then at the end of it was just like, oh shit, 90 minutes, oh, we've just messed that up there. That was the most annoying thing. Not that we've lost the invincible season or whatever, just the way that we did it.
I think we have to be very careful, by the way, about, you mentioned anti-climax and stuff, is that if you'd have said to us Liverpool are going to win the league on 77 points on the last kick of the season, you'd have all bit their hand off.
We were all prepared for that, by the way.
Exactly.
We went into this season prepared happened, to win it in the last kick of the season.
If we'd have Leicestered it and everyone was like got like 80 points and we'd listen, so as and when they win the league, like, you've got to be careful that it doesn't become that, because it's almost been that, right, like you say, like, they could get knocked out the FA Cup by Chelsea and they could get knocked out the Champions League by Atleti. That is not beyond the realms of possibility. And they can still win the league with seven games to go. And there's almost something out there that makes you think, well, that'll be a bit rubbish. No, it really shouldn't.
Yeah.
We have to be very, very careful.
And it's only because we hyped ourselves up.
Just going back to the Invincible stuff, right, I'm with Steve. I think the point matters more. I think everybody gets a chance to go and score as many points. That's the point of the league. You go and score as many points as you possibly can. So to get the highest points total ever is the most important thing there for me. I'd rather have three wins and get 9 points than draw 9 times. Mm. You know, that's the way I look at it, you know what I mean? Or if, you know, I'd rather get three wins and a loss to get 9 points out of 12 than fucking draw 9 and lose 3.
Yeah, I think that...
And also on the trophy side of things, it's a bag of balls. Really, like, it's not a trophy that matters. It's not up for grabs at the start of the season. Realistically, And it's kind of like them singing about it is us singing about being world champions. Everybody knows it's a fucking shit competition to win, but you're going to ram it down everyone's throat like it's the greatest. Like it actually fucking means something in football. Like what we've done, that's what they're doing.
Yeah,
that's all they're doing. They know it's fucking worthless.
Yeah, there's an Arsenal on the Arsenal's greatest win was that, and the second greatest moment was Serge Gnabry scoring against Tottenham. So when you're having that, we've had it. When you have them type of seasons, you'll see something going against one of your rivals, and you'll jump all over.
Oh, Schadenfreude, isn't it? We talk about this all the time. But our highest points of being a Liverpool fan over the last 30 years have often been something bad happening to Man United.
Like yeah. I remember celebrating the Aguero goal, and I went back. I remember yeah. Jumping up and down. Yeah. Like, now I'd be like, all right. I hate them as much. Yeah. But you know what I mean? But it's like at the
there's ultimately, you see it all the time. There's an episode of How About Your Mother based on the concept of it, about the perfect game. You're playing for the perfect game comes with its own set of stresses that I don't think Liverpool need. And I don't know whether it makes it more or likely for us to win other silverware. But I think trying not to lose a game in the league becomes an obsession. Mm. And that's why Arsenal drew so many games, because it became Wenger's obsession. And that's why, and I will never sit here and denigrate that. Man United fans love to try and go, oh, look how many games he drew. Who's asked? He didn't lose a game in the season. It's unreal. Yeah. And the reason nobody else has done it for a reason, because it's basically impossible.
And that's where we should have got to it, Paul, is that what you mentioned there? We should have won the league, and then our focus could have been, now we can draw every single game, but yeah. it doesn't matter. That's what it could have been, if that's what you were interested in. By losing this, you're taking that away. So I agree.
But you get jitters. It brings jitters into your game. Yeah. People talk about the mentality of these footballers, and they'll thrive in it. Everyone will crack under the pressure eventually. Like, you go bowling and trying to get a strike in every single thing, because all you know is that all you've got to do is, when you're halfway through, so at any point in the movement, it just takes your brain to go and do anything, and it's done. That's the pressure that is, and the longer that runs, the more that pressure mounts. And again, that's why I think what Arsenal did was incredible. I rank that as was probably one of the biggest achievements in football that they've done there, never to be taken away from them. But, and we can't know whether this is a thing until the end of the season, if Liverpool go on and add another cup. Even if we don't, who cares? As long as we box the Premier League off, it doesn't matter. But if we, in addition to that, either break a points total, break the points record, or we pick up the FA Cup, or we manage to pick up the European Cup in between that, then ultimately that's better, because that'll be... That's my take anyway.
I love it all. Like this, like, you know, United always talk about the treble winning season. I think that is more impressive than Invincibles, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. I think it is. I think City have got the Centurions, Arsenal have got the Invincibles. And no matter what, I know that Liverpool, this is one of the greatest Liverpool sides. And you're not going to, people arguing about who's the greatest between the 99 this and the Invincibles that, doesn't really matter. All that matters to me is that Liverpool win the Premier League.
Yeah.
And that we win it again next season. Mm-hmm. And that you go on and dominate. Let someone in 15 years' time decide how good this Liverpool side is. Right now, I'll fucking enjoy watching them every single week, because I know how good this Liverpool side are.
100% brilliant, Chris. Couldn't have wrapped it up any better myself. There you go. That is the final words on Watford 3, Liverpool 0. I was genuinely prepared for that to be 20 minutes and then get off. So well done, everyone. That was good. Thanks for watching, for listening, and for subscribing. If you want more, head over to the RedmenTV.com and sign up. It's completely free for the first month, and you get loads of amazing additional content. So even when it's not good, we've got your back. When it's brilliant, we've got your back. We've got you covered from every single angle of Liverpool, on and off the pitch, in video form and in podcast form as well. We'll be back for the build-up show as the FA Cup looms, and a perfect chance to put things right. We shall see you there. Ta-ra.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.